Tonight we're in part three in our series called The Gospel of Ruth, and we're reading through the entire book of Ruth in the Old Testament. So if you haven't been here in the last couple weeks, let me bring you up to speed, because as I said, we're in chapter three now, and you kind of need to know what happened in chapters one and two. So the story of Ruth starts with actually a woman named Naomi, and she lives in a little village in ancient Israel called Bethlehem. It wasn't very well known then. It would take about another 1,000 years for someone else to come to Bethlehem that would become a little bit better known in history. But back then, it was just a little village. So this woman named Naomi is living there, and there's a huge famine in the land. And so her and her husband and her two sons move to the country, the neighboring country of Moab. But when she gets there, her husband dies, and she becomes a widow. Her two sons marry two Moabite women, and so they live there together, and 10 years goes by, and neither of her daughter-in-laws can have any children. And then eventually, both of her sons die. So Naomi's fallen on hard times. She's in this foreign country. Her husband's died. Her sons have died. Neither of her daughter-in-laws can have any children. There's no one to carry on the family line. She finally decides to move back to Bethlehem in Israel, and life is very tough for her. But one of her daughter-in-laws, Ruth, decides to go back with her, even though it's going to be tough for her as well, because now she's going to be a widow, she's going to be a foreigner in the country of Israel, and yet somehow they're going to make it together when they come back to Bethlehem. And sure enough, when they get there, Ruth goes out one day looking for food. They probably had no food. They're wondering how they're going to make it day, you know, after day. Ruth goes out looking for food, looking for some leftover grain laying on the ground, and a nice, wealthy man named Boaz decides to take care of her. He allows her to get grain in his fields. He allows her to get some of the best grain. He tells her when she gets tired that she can take a break. When she gets hungry, she can have some food. When she gets thirsty, he'll give her water, and she can stay there the entire spring and provide for her and Naomi. And so God has been with them in their suffering. God has met them in their need. And now we're in another chapter in their story, and that's where we continue tonight.
About time I arranged a good home for you so you can have a happy life. And isn't Boaz our close relative, the one with whose young women we've been working? Maybe it's time to make our move. Tonight is the night of Boaz's barley harvest at the threshing floor. Take a bath, put on some perfume, get all dressed up, and go to the threshing floor. But don't let him know you're there until the party is well underway and he's had plenty of food and drink. When you see him slipping off to sleep, watch where he lies down and then go there. Lie at his feet to let him know that you are available to him for marriage. Then wait and see what he says. He'll tell you what to do. Ruth said, "If you say so, I'll do it just as you told me." So she went down to the threshing floor and put her mother-in-law's plan into action. Boaz had a good time. Eating and drinking his fill, he felt great. Then he went off to get some sleep, lying down at the end of a stack of barley. Ruth quietly followed. She lay down at his feet to signal her availability for marriage. In the middle of the night, the man was suddenly startled and sat up. Surprised, this woman asleep at his feet. He said, "And who are you?" She said, "I am Ruth, your servant. Take me under your protecting wing. You're my close relative, a guardian redeemer. You have the right to marry me." He said, "Yahweh, God bless you, my dear daughter. What a splendid expression of love. You could have chased after other men, younger men, but you didn't. And now, my dear daughter, don't you worry about a thing. I'll do all you could want or ask. Everybody in town knows what a courageous woman you are, a real treasure. You're right, I am a close relative to you, but there is even one closer than I am. So stay the rest of the night. In the morning, if he wants to exercise his customary rights and responsibilities as the closest guardian redeemer, he'll have his chance. But if he isn't interested, As Yahweh God lives, I'll do it. Now go back to sleep. Ruth slept at his feet until dawn, but she got up while it was still dark and wouldn't be recognized. Then Boaz said to himself, "No one must know that Ruth came to the threshing floor." So Boaz said, "Bring the shawl you're wearing and spread it out." She spread it out, and he poured it full of barley, 6 huge scoops, and put it on her shoulders. Then Boaz went back to town. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "And how did things go, my dear daughter?" Ruth told her everything that the man had done for her, adding, "And he gave me all this barley besides, 6 huge scoops. He told me, 'You can't go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" Naomi said, "Let's stay here and wait, my dear daughter, until we find out how things turn out. That man isn't going to fool around. Mark my words, he's going to get everything wrapped up."
So, interesting turn of events in the book of Ruth. Last week I said there wasn't any romance in the story, and there wasn't any romance in the story last week, but this week Ruth turns into a bit of a wild and crazy woman. And so before we get there, let's back up and start back at the beginning of the chapter. Naomi comes to Ruth, and this is what she says, starting in chapter 3. Verse 1, it says, "One day, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, 'My daughter, I must find a home for you where you will be well provided for.'" You see, Naomi realized that even though they had just made it through a really tough season in life, I mean, they had come back to Bethlehem with nothing. They had no food, they had no work, they had no jobs, they were women in a patriarchal culture, they had no husbands, they had no kids. We don't know if they had a home. They were living somewhere. We don't know if it was theirs or not. But really, they were in a pretty dire situation. And so Naomi knew that they had just sort of made it through this difficult time in their life where they were wondering if they could even have food on the table in the next couple of days. And yet, as Naomi looked into the future, she realized they weren't out of the woods yet. Like all wasn't taken care of. Even though this nice man had given them some food and had taken care of them over the last few days or the last few weeks, it kind of hits her one day. You know, we've still got our faith, and maybe we've got some food, but we still don't have a future. Like, this thing is I'm just not sure we're going to make it. And it's almost like those situations where people go through a crisis in their lives, and they're going through a really tough time, and they get through the immediate crisis, and then the realization hits them that everything is not over. You know, there's a long-term future that they still don't have that they've got to figure out how to manage. The easiest example I can think of is, remember earlier this year when the earthquake hit Haiti. And that was literally just earlier this year. It feels like so long ago. And yet you remember when the earthquake hit, people were dying. Like, it was a disaster, and the buildings had crumbled, and so the world sort of went into rescue mode, and they needed immediate attention. They needed food, they needed clean water, they needed medicine, they needed hospitals, they needed rescue teams. I mean, it was a crisis. And so the world rallied, and the Red Cross and all the organizations went down there, and they jumped into, you know, they set up hospitals, and they set up rescue teams, and they did all of this stuff to help get the people through just the next night. And it was almost like that was the situation Naomi and Ruth were in when they first moved back to Bethlehem. But now a few days have passed. Now a few, maybe weeks, we don't know exactly how long has passed. And just like the people in Haiti now, when all the rescue teams have left and most of the money has dried up and the donations aren't pouring in anymore and most of the world has moved on, the truth is, they still don't have a future. There's still people down there wondering how they're going to make it. And that's where Naomi and Ruth would have been. And so Naomi comes to Ruth and she says, "Look, we have got to figure out how you can have a future. And the only way that you're going to have a future is to find another man. It's basically to find a husband and a family who can take care of you." Because again, don't forget who Ruth is. Ruth is a young Moabite. She's from this other country, Moab. The Israelites hated the Moabites. So she's a foreigner in a foreign land. She's a widow. She's barren. She can't have children. She's poor. She has nothing going for her. And I almost can't over-explain this, but in that culture, everything, if you were a woman, a young woman, especially a widow, everything was bound up in whether you had family that could take care of you. And Ruth had none. She left all of her family back in Moab. She's by herself except for Naomi in Israel. So you need a family that could take care of you. And pretty much if you're a woman, you needed a man in that culture. And then you needed to have children. You needed to have especially sons who could grow up, who could carry on the family line, who could work the fields, who could take care of the possessions, and eventually who could take care of you when you began to get older. And single women, you think the pressure is like on you now, you know, to get married, to have that expectation. And I know the American dream is alive and well, and there's still sort of this idea that, you know, you go to college and you get a good degree and then you get a good job and you make a little money and then you get a man. And then if you want to keep working, you keep working. You have 2.2 kids and then you get a big house and you have a nice place where the kids can play. And everything's going to go according to your schedule exactly on your timetables when you want it to happen. That's the expectation, and it's still alive and well in our culture. Take that and multiply it by like 1,000. Because that's how women would have felt in ancient Israelite culture. It wouldn't have been just an expectation. It wouldn't have been just a nice to have. It wouldn't have been about romance or love or chasing your dreams or anything like that. It would have been about survival for Ruth and Naomi. So Naomi comes to Ruth one day and she says, against all odds, because the truth is no man's going to be interested in her. I mean, what Israelite man is going to be interested in this woman named Ruth? There's nothing to gain from marrying a poor woman from another culture that everyone else hates, who probably can't have children. I mean, and yet against all those odds, Naomi comes to Ruth and she says, look, we've got to find you a home, a future, and somebody who can take care of you, because the truth is I certainly can't do it anymore. So Naomi comes up with a plan, and here's the plan. She says in the very next verse to Ruth, now, Boaz, with whose women you have worked, is a relative of ours. Interesting coincidence. Tonight, he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself, put on your best clothes, then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you're there until he has finished eating and drinking a lot. And when he lies down, note the place where he's lying, and then go and uncover his feet, which is uncover his feet, and lie down. Sort of a euphemism in Hebrew. That's all you need to know. And lie down. And he will tell you what to do. Now, we read this, and it's like, what is going on here? Like, if I didn't know anything else, if I didn't know the context, I didn't know what was happening in this story, I would say that Naomi is telling Ruth she basically needs to go seduce this guy named Boaz. Like, go get prettied up, put on the nicest, skimpiest looking thing, smell good, you know, wait till he's eaten a lot and he feels good, wait till he's gotten a little tipsy, and then he goes to the back of the barn and, you know, sneak up next to him in the middle of the night and make your move. Like, that's basically what Naomi is saying. Now, there is some other context. That's not exactly what Naomi is saying, but I don't want to say that's not in there at all, because there's a little bit of that that is in the passage. But here's the truth. What Naomi is doing is she's saying, look, it is time for us to be bold. Like, it's time for us to step out and do something bold, because it is a matter of life and death for us now. And if I don't find you someone that can actually take care of you, Ruth, you are not going to make it. And the truth is, if you don't make it, I'm not going to make it, because the only hope I've got now is you and any kind of family that you might have. So we got to come up with some sort of plan. Like we've got, and if it means being bold, and if it means taking risks, and if it means stepping out on faith, and if it means dressing up one night and looking good and going and getting bold, like we just got to go for it and do it. Now, there's a couple of interesting cultural things that are going on here because we might ask, like, well, why this plan? Like, why, you know, if things were dire and if, you know, Naomi, mother-in-law, needed to help Ruth, her daughter-in-law, find, you know, a man, like, why did she come up with this plan? Why Boaz? And why sneaking up on him in this way? And why doing all this stuff? Well, there's a couple of things that you need to know. First, there's two interesting laws on the books in Israel. And you remember last week we read about there were, God had put some laws in place in the nation of Israel to take care of people who were poor. Well, there's a couple of more laws that we need to look at tonight because they relate to how relatives are going to interact with people who have fallen on hard times. And maybe Naomi has got something going in the back of her mind. Now, there's one law that's called the Levirate Law. And Levirate is just actually a Latin word that means brother-in-law or husband's brother. That's where that strange sort of word comes from. But the Levirate Law is found in Deuteronomy 25, starting in verse 5, and this is what it says. It says, if brothers are living together and one of them dies without a son, his widow must not marry outside the family. Her husband's brother shall take her and marry her and fulfill the duty of a brother-in-law to her. The first son she bears shall carry on the name of the dead brother so that his name will not be blotted out from Israel. So what's going on here is whenever there was a woman living in Israel and she was obviously married to a man and they hadn't been able to have children or didn't have any children at this point. And so there was no one to carry on the family line. And for some reason, the man dies, then his brother needs to marry her. And then when his brother marries her, then they'll have children, hopefully. And then there will be sons to carry on the family line, to carry on the family inheritance. Because again, family and honor and respect and carrying on the family name and the family, that was everything in Israelite culture. And so this was this law. And if the husband, if the brother-in-law, if the husband, the deceased husband's brother didn't fulfill it, and he could say, no, I'm not going to do it, then the passage goes on and says, then everybody in society should shame him and make him feel terrible because it is his right and it is his duty and his responsibility to take care of family. And so if his brother dies, he needs to look after, you know, the widow, marry her, make sure that they're sons to carry on the family name. Now, in this instance, we know that both of the sons had died. Ruth's husband had died and his brother had died. And Boaz was not the brother-in-law of Ruth. In fact, Boaz probably was not the brother-in-law of Naomi. Boaz was related to Naomi because remember, Naomi was married to a man who lived in Bethlehem. His name was Elimelech. And so his family was from Bethlehem. And so when they had gotten back and Ruth had found this man's field and was working in it, basically Naomi says, hey, this guy named Boaz is actually a distant relative of ours. And so even though this specific law doesn't specifically apply, maybe Naomi is saying there's something going on here where relatives are supposed to take care of widows whenever they fall on hard times, and maybe Boaz will fit this situation. Now, there's one other law. It's called the law of the guardian redeemer or the kinsman redeemer. And it's found in Leviticus chapter 25, verse 25. And this is what it says. If anyone among you, talking to the nation of Israel, becomes poor and sells some of their property, their nearest relative is to come and redeem what they have sold. Now, this law is more focused on land and property. And what it's saying is when someone falls on hard times, if they own land, oftentimes they have to sell the land to make it out of the hard times, or the creditors come in and take the land, you know, like the bank repossessing your car or your house or something like that. Sometimes the creditors will come in and do that. Or sometimes it got so bad that you had to actually sell yourself into slavery. And the passage goes on to say that whenever this happens, whenever the land or your inheritance or yourself has been sold away, that there's always an obligation and an opportunity for a relative to come in and redeem the situation. So the creditors need to allow your nearest relative to come in and buy the land back, or even buy you back if you've fallen in hard times and you're now in slavery. That was just the way the system worked, because again, land and inheritance and all those things were very important in that culture, and they wanted to keep that within the family. And we don't know if Ruth and Naomi owned any land. It's possible that Naomi's deceased husband owned some land. It's possible that that land had to have been sold. It's possible that it had fallen away. And it's possible that as Naomi is thinking about their future, she's saying, Boaz is a relative. Maybe somehow, some way, he can redeem this situation. If we can hook you up, Ruth, with Boaz, and he can understand the situation, then maybe, just maybe, he'll marry you and he'll bring redemption to this situation. He'll bring redemption to our very future. So she comes up with a plan. She tells Ruth to go in there one night. And it's a bold plan. Like, there's huge risks involved. I mean, think about it. I mean, Boaz wakes up in the middle of the night and there's this woman there. I mean, Boaz could react in so many different ways. I mean, he could be offended. He could kick her out. He could think that she's trying to prostitute herself to him. He could go and tell everyone and destroy her reputation. Not that she maybe had a great reputation before, but maybe he could confirm what everyone even thought about her already. He could abuse her. He could use her. He could discard her the next morning. He was wealthy and prominent. He had all the power, and she is walking into the situation and basically making herself available to him. There's everything in the world could go wrong here. And yet Naomi and Ruth decide, let's go for it. Let's give it a try. It's time to be bold. It's time to step out. So Ruth does it. You read the story and you follow on, and Ruth goes in there. She makes herself look nice. She goes in that night. She waits till he's eating a lot. She waits till he's drinking a little bit. He goes back. He lays down. And the funniest thing, I love what it says in verse 8. It says, in the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned, and there was a woman lying at his feet. Guys, anybody ever had this happen to you? Anybody want to admit it in church? It's right here in the Bible. Like, it happens right here in the Bible. So Boaz wakes up. There's this woman here. We don't know. Did this happen very often? But it happened this night. And he says, who are you? He asked. I am your servant Ruth, she said. Spread the corner, or the Hebrew word is actually wing. Spread the wing, or the corner, of your garment over me, since you are a guardian Redeemer. Now again, this is so bold. Ruth is laying there, and he wakes up, and she says, I'm Ruth, you know, and I'm the one that's been working in your field that you've been so kind to. Would you, and it's a metaphor here, and it does have sort of sexual overtones, would you spread your garment over me? Meaning, you know, and yet it also means, would you spread your wings of protection over me? And Boaz would have remembered this, because last chapter we saw that Boaz had praised Ruth because he had said, you've come to Israel and you've put your trust in God, and I'm going to show you grace, and I'm going to be generous to you, and I'm going to take care of you because you have sought God and your refuge. And remember the words he used? He said, you have hidden under the shadow of God's wings. And now Ruth is coming to him and saying, would you take me under your wings? This is so bold. I mean, think back about everything that Ruth has gone through up until this point. She was living in Moab. Her husband had died. Her father-in-law had died. And she had decided to step out and be bold and choose to forsake probably her religion and her beliefs that she had before. She had her own beliefs in Moab. They had their own gods and their own religious beliefs. And she had chosen to place her trust in Yahweh, the God of Israel. She had stepped out in boldness and she had said, even though there was no reason in the world to go back to Israel, she had said to Naomi, I'll go back with you. I will share your pain. I'll share your emptiness. I'll share your brokenness. And I will be there for you, even though there's nothing I can gain from it. She stepped out in boldness, and when they got back, she was the one who went out to the fields and said, I'll try to find food for us. Even though in these fields there was lots of harm and violence and stuff that could happen to women, and yet Ruth went out and did it. And now she's going to this guy's place in the middle of the night, laying at his feet and saying, would you take me under the shadow of your wings? Because you could be my guardian, redeemer. Naomi's being bold, Ruth's being bold, but look how Boaz responds, because he's bold as well. He says in verse 10, the Lord bless you, my daughter, he replied. This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And it's not clear if she even could have run after the younger men, but it's almost like he's saying, look, and this is where we kind of know Boaz is probably a good bit older than Ruth. And he's saying, you haven't chased after these other things. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All the people of my town know that you are a woman of noble character. That's amazing. What an amazing statement for him to make about Ruth. And so he boldly responds to her. He says, look, I will take care of you. And even though maybe he has nothing to gain from it, I mean, truly, he has nothing to gain from it. He says, I will take care of you. But there's a little problem. He goes on in verse 12. Although it is true that I am a guardian redeemer, there is another who is more closely related than I. So stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to do his duty as your guardian redeemer, good. Let him redeem you. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. So lie here until morning. You see, even though Boaz isn't her dead husband's brother-in-law, and even though Boaz isn't even the closest relative, and we're not even sure what kind of land or what kind of inheritance is involved here or anything like that, he says, look, I will do it. I will redeem you. I will take you. I'm not going to take advantage of you. He says, stay here tonight. And then he works it out so that she can leave in a way that's not suspicious and other people won't know. And then he gives her some food to take back to Naomi. And he basically goes above and beyond everything he could do to say, I will take care of you. There is another man. And according to the laws and according to our customs, if anyone has any right to redeem you, then I need to give it to him first. Boaz is a guy of integrity. He says, but you know what? If somehow we can make it work, I will take care of you. And that's where our story ends for tonight. And that's where we'll pick it up next week. What's going to happen? Is Boaz going to be able to pull it off? Is the other guy going to step in? Is tragedy going to enter the story? You'll have to wait and come back next week. But before we close, let me ask you a question. Do you have bold faith? Like what kind of faith do you have? If I was to ask you to put one adjective in front of the word faith to characterize the kind of faith you have tonight, or right now in your life, what's the adjective you would put in there? Would you put the word bold in there? Would you say, I've got bold faith? Is there anything right now that you're praying for in your life in a bold way? Or your prayers mostly just thanking God and before the meal, you know, thanks for providing this. Or maybe when you kind of bump up against those things that drive you crazy in the middle of the day, sort of, God, help me get through this or whatever. And that's all fine. We should pray for those things and thank God for those things. But aside from that, is there anything in your life right now where you're going to God just boldly and saying, God, would you do this in my life right now? Like, this is such a bold request. I'm scared to even bring it to you, and yet I'm going to bring it to you. And I know that in doing that, I could be disappointed again. I could be discouraged if it doesn't happen again. And yet, I'm not going to give up, and I'm going to exercise bold faith. And I'm going to step out, and it's going to require risk, because every time you have bold faith, it requires risk. Is there anything you're going to God with right now in that kind of way? You remember, there's a story of a guy that came to Jesus one time, and he brought his son to Jesus, and his son was very, very sick. And he says, Jesus, would you heal my son? He brings this big request to this Hebrew teacher that he's never met before. He doesn't know Jesus. And he says, Jesus, would you heal my son? And Jesus says, well, if you believe I can do it, I'll do it. You know, all you got to do is believe. And it just kind of sounds like a televangelist, but that's another story. But he says, all you got to do is believe. And the man looks back at Jesus and he says, I do believe, but would you help my unbelief? Almost like faith is not about quantity. It's not about how much you have, but it's about the little bit that you do have. Even with all your doubts, even with all your questions, even with none of the answers completely satisfying, even with all the risks, are you willing to take even the little bit you do have and go to God and say, God, would you do this in my life? Because I need you to, and I'm counting on you, and I'm fully dependent on you to do this, because it's not going to happen if you don't somehow intervene and do this. And I don't have a ton of faith, God, but the little bit I do have, I'm just going to come to you boldly with. You see, it's not about how much faith we have. But maybe like Ruth and Naomi, it's about just saying, all right, it's time that we got to step out and take some risks. Maybe you've been going through a tough season in life like Ruth and Naomi. Maybe you feel like you've hit rock bottom. And you're in a place where it's just things are kind of broken and you just feel an emptiness and just this one situation or this relationship or whatever just isn't getting any better. And if you're in that kind of situation, as we said a couple of weeks ago, there is a time and a place for that. And there's a time and a place, even like Naomi, in your bitterness to just cry out to God and say, God, why is this happening? And yet, ultimately, what I think God is going to want to do is he's going to want to move you just like he moved Naomi from chapter 1 to chapter 3, where Naomi's coming to Ruth and saying, all right, God was with us in our darkest time, and now God's calling us to step out in a little bit of faith. And I'm not going to wallow in my bitterness anymore, and I'm not going to keep asking these questions because I'm probably still never going to get all the answers that I want. And so I'm just going to start taking some baby steps of faith, which are going to involve risk, and yet that's what God is calling me to do. So where are you taking risks in your life right now? Is there anywhere, if you had to say, is there anywhere where you're being bold in your faith? Because I think that's what God's calling you to do. I think that's what God's calling me to do. And I think that's what following Jesus and following God is all about. It's not about the destination. It's about the journey of faith and trusting him. Even when we don't have all the answers, even when we don't know how it's going to work out, trusting him with the results. Because that's what Naomi and Ruth did. They didn't know how it was going to work out. But they said, you know what? The results are not in our hands. We're going to step out in faith and trust that God will come through for us. Let me close this in a word of prayer. Lord, this is an interesting story, and it's just interesting to read a story like this in the Bible where there's so much happening, and there are some cultural customs and things going on, and yet it's just still neat to see, even in the life of Naomi, and even in the life of Ruth, and even in the life of Boaz, these people who are just exercising bold faith. And those are the kind of people we want to be, God. I think I speak probably for everyone here tonight, that we just want to be people who ultimately trust you. And so if there's somewhere in each of our lives where we haven't been doing that, would you just prod us and convict us? And then, Lord, like the man who said that prayer to you, would you help us where we don't have faith? And would you just give it to us? Because we know we can't muster it up ourselves. Faith is like a gift. And so we ask you to give us faith. Help us with our unbelief. And help us to trust you. We know that you want to do so many things in our lives. We know that you want to be present in every aspect of our lives. And so, Lord, would you help us to trust you in those places where we don't. And this week, as we celebrate, continue to celebrate your birth, would you just continue to teach us who you are and what you're like? We pray all this in your name. Amen.